Welcome, preachers, teachers, and other leaders of the church. I am Emmy.
I am Carrie.
And this is Preacher's Report this week today, preceding Sunday, December 6th, 2015.
I'm just going to briefly say what the readings are, because there is a lot of news happening, and
sure is.
We just need to get to that and honestly get it over with, because I've been a little dreading this week. So, for Revised Common Lectionary, your first reading is from Baruch 5, 1 through 9, or Malachi 3, 1 through 4. Your psalm comes from Luke 1 this week, which is Zechariah's song, which is wonderful and beautiful, and I love it so much. And we don't pay enough attention to Zechariah's story. Second reading is from Philippians 1, 3 through 11, and the gospel is from Luke chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Narrative lectionary, you guys are hanging out in Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 through 11.
Which is comfort, comfort, oh my people, and is rather apt this week.
Yes, indeed.
We have separated today's news segment into two sections. Guns and not guns. So, we gotta talk about that, America.
Yeah,
we gotta talk about that. Alright. In Chicago this week, tapes have been released regarding the shooting of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald. He was shot on October 20th, 2014, and the report was that there was calls of a man acting erratically and carrying a knife, and the police showed up and shot him, according to their reports, once, and took him out because he was attacking an officer or moving menacingly towards an officer. In the autopsy on October 22nd, they found 16 slugs in his body, including 9 in his back. So the report was not accurately depicting the situation. Lawsuits were then filed to try to get the dashboard camera video from the police squad cars that pulled up, and that was delayed for 13 months. Now that it's been released, we see that McDonald is wielding a knife, but is walking away from the line of police cruisers. Van Dyke, the officer who shot him, gets out of his car and shoots him within about 6 seconds, and then continues to shoot him even after he is writhing on the ground. So Chicago has seen a myriad of protests this week and significant challenges to Rahm Emanuel's mayorship, because it's strikingly convenient that the dash cam video was only released after Rahm Emanuel made it through election season.
I have nothing to say.
More news about guns.
More news about guns. Hey, more Americans had their backgrounds checked purchasing guns on Black Friday than any other day on record, according to the data released by the FBI this week. The National Instant Criminal Background Check System processed 185,345 requests on November 27th. One of the largest retail sales days in the country. This was an approximate 5% increase over the 175,000-ish received on Black Friday in 2014, which comes from Stephen Fisher, the FBI's chief of multimedia productions. The previous high for receipts were around 177,000, and that was in 2012. Previous spikes for background checks conducted before a gun buyer can obtain a firearm occurred after other prominent mass shootings, like in 2012 in the wake of Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. So, people are buying guns on Black Friday now.
Here's what worries me. Isn't Black Friday for present shopping?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So,
like, and here's my deal on Black Friday. We're just going to put this out here.
Do it.
So, Black Friday, I understand all the people posting about how, like, spend time with your family and, like, Black Friday is awful. And there are definitely awful aspects to Black Friday. Like, it's ridiculous and people get hurt every single year over Tickle Me Elmos and, yeah. And, like, we need to respect each other and stop being ridiculous. However, there is a whole community of people who rely on Black Friday in order to buy presents for their family members, in order to be able to afford a good Christmas. And I completely support that, and I think that those people should be allowed to have, you know, to take part in Black Friday and be able to have more gifts for their kids, or just being able to celebrate Christmas if Black Friday allows you to do that, go ahead and participate. However, if you are buying a gun on Black Friday, I don't understand how that's contributing to Christmas. So, what's happening with that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're just gonna...
we're gonna move on to more guns.
Oh, by the way, and most of you will have heard about this most likely by now, the San Bernardino shooting in California on Wednesday. Two assailants opened fire in San Bernardino at a party in the Inland Regional Center. 14 people were killed and 21 wounded. Most of them were county employees. There was a car chase, and the two armed suspects were killed by police. Their motive is right now unknown, but there's been significant speculation, especially after the release of their names, Syed Rizwan Farooq and Pakistan national Tashfeen Malik. There are some reports, no solid evidence, I don't think, yet, but reports that I think Syed, but I may be wrong, that one of them had a connection to terrorists in other countries. I've seen ISIS and I've seen Al-Qaeda in different reports, so I think this is, at this point, a bit suspect. The attacker's motive is unknown, but it's there's also a possibility, because they focused on a particular workplace, that it was workplace-related. The suspects were heavily armed and they were wearing tactical attire. They had an arsenal of ammunition and pipe bombs in the home that they shared in Redlands. All of the guns so far, I believe, were confirmed as legally purchased. So, in reaction to that, if you're familiar with how Twitter works, so Twitter, you can post 140 characters, so it's very short sort of thoughts about whatever is going on at the time. It's like Facebook, but it's very limited as far as your communication. And a significant number of politicians and other, you know, world leaders or community leaders are on Twitter and use that to communicate with people. And so a lot of politicians were tweeting on Wednesday and Thursday, you know, oh, we're sending thoughts and prayers to the people of San Bernardino and to those involved in the shooting. And Igor Volsky, the director of video and the contributing editor at the website and organization Think Progress, got a list of all the donations that the National Rifle Association made to political candidates during the election cycle in 2014. And anytime a politician tweeted, oh, my thoughts and prayers are with San Bernardino, Volsky would retweet. So like, it's like you can see both of them at the same time, would retweet that statement along with the amount of money that they received from the NRA during the last election cycle. So for Volsky, he's making the connection that, you know, you're sending thoughts and prayers and you care about these people, but you're also taking money from the largest gun lobby organization, which keeps guns out in the world. And because of the activism of the NRA, these guns that these men used in the San Bernardino shootings were illegally acquired.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
Before we do that.
Oh.
Just quick statement. So, I think what Volsky did was awesome. Like, to connect those two. This is completely just me, my opinion. But I think it's, like, it was a really good representation of, yeah, you can send thoughts and prayers, but this is what's being contributed to you. I also just wanted to say that I was speaking with someone, who I really respect, the other day, and he was a member of the NRA like 15 years ago or something. And he was saying that when he was in the NRA, their main focus was like background checks and making sure that guns were safe and that, you know, they weren't getting into the wrong hands, and that like the NRA was this big gun safety kind of deal. And he said, and all of that has now changed. And it's all about like making sure you keep your gun and that, you know, like legislation doesn't come out that makes you get rid of your guns and things. So yeah, I just wanted to put that out there that like the NRA used to be cool, apparently, according to this guy that, again, this man that I really deeply respect, who was a member and has now completely just changed.
I mean, I'd have to look at the history of the NRA, but I think there was significant political shifting, like you're talking about 15 years ago after the Columbine shooting. because the Columbine shooting was like one of the first or one of the sort of pinnacles of mass school shootings, and the conversation about like how do we deal with the fact that these kids obtained these guns, you know, from people who had purchased them legally, how do we kind of crack down on that? And that, I think, was when there was a significant shift in gun ownership where they said, like, no, you can, you know, the sort of like, you can pry my gun from my cold, dead hands kind of thing. Yeah.
So. Yeah. On the same day as the San Bernardino shooting, a gunman in Savannah, Georgia shot four people, killing a woman and injuring three men. 17-year-old Jamin Hayward, 34-year-old Brady Council, 40-year-old Jarrett Myers, and 50-year-old Jaron Washington. Police suspect two shooters and have released no further information.
Yep. But this got pretty much no press because it was the same day as the San Bernardino shooting.
Yep.
On that note, a subreddit of the on the community, reddit.com, I believe their tag is Guns Are Cool, but they like it's a ironic tag. They keep track of what they call mass shootings, so and they define that as any instance in which four or more people are shot in an event. That can include the gunman, so if it's like three people and then the gunman commits suicide or is taken out by police, then that also counts. They are keeping track of that many instances, so four or more people shot in any particular instance during the year. We are now on instance 355. If you can do math, you know that we're not at 355 days in the year yet. So we have had more mass shootings, by that definition, in the United States than we've had days.
There was some video put out, and I wish I could remember the source right now. I just saw it on Facebook very briefly, so I apologize. But I'm sure if you have Google powers, you should be able to find it. But it's a video that shows that they just put a dot as to where, like, when a mass shooting happened. They have a map of the United States. They just put a little dot on there, and they run through the year. And it is insane to watch and just watch all these dots pop up constantly. For, like, basically every single day of the year.
And that doesn't include, that doesn't include domestic violence shootings. That doesn't include, like, random happenstance. That doesn't, it's awful. It does not include, for example, on the same day as the San Bernardino and Savannah, Georgia shootings, a man gunned down Wednesday, same day, at a strip mall in Southwest Houston. Original reports were that it might have been connected with a women's medical care clinic, I think kind of in the wake of the Planned Parenthood shootings, although this clinic does not offer things that Planned Parenthood offers that people object to. But in the end, it seems more like it might have been gang-related. But so essentially, the man who hasn't been yet identified but was identified as a Hispanic male was found about 2:15. The gunman escaped in a stolen Hyundai Sonata. They shot from the vehicle, drove through the parking lot, hit another car, abandoned the car, and ran. Detectives had two people in the back of a police car, according to witnesses, and we don't know if those people were witnesses to the shooting or suspects. But there was a later report of another Hispanic male shot in another part of Houston, so then there were questions about whether this was gang-related. I don't know what to say. I might as well, let's just finish up with...
Oh, with our gun section.
One more gun thing. So the Minneapolis community in North Minneapolis was protesting the shooting of Jamar Clark. We talked about this a few podcasts ago. The community was holding down Fort outside the 4th Precinct. They'd sort of taken over the front lawn and the street and had built... They put in tents. They had fire pits. They were collecting food so that they could kind of hold the fort and protest, asking to have the tapes released of the incident because eyewitness reports versus the police report were differing about whether Jamar... essentially was engaging in actions that would merit his death. They were holding down the fort. It snowed in Minnesota a couple days ago, and they were still out there. But on Thursday morning, around 4 a.m., the community officers came out to the community and said, "You need to leave within the next 15 minutes. Seven people were arrested and charged with obstruction, and then the entire setup, so all of the tents, all of the donated food, all of the wood piles for campfires, was bulldozed and piled into dumpsters. So that protest is now essentially ended by police action, although, of course, there's a significant protest community still going on, just not at that particular location.
So I was preparing the prayers of intercession for this week, and I was on Sundays and Seasons because it's a helpful place to start. And I think a lot of preachers use Sundays and Seasons to put together worship. And they have a section in there that this week I noticed that talks about praying for places with violence. And it says, and it's the first time that I've seen this. It said, and I can't remember the exact wording, but pray for places of violence. And then it said, name places here, like italicized. And I was working on it, and I think I named like 8 vast places, and then just said, you know, and the others we named before you now, because I'm sure there will be more that happen between when I wrote them and when and on Sunday. And so I think that's just a powerful reminder that even a publication like that is getting into this, and just that prayers are good and necessary, and it should be very much a part of prayers of intercession. I also think that we need to start looking into doing more, but we can't ignore it. So so keep all of these places in your prayers for everyone involved, is what I'm going to say, and look for maybe ways that we can do something. Because I'm personally sick of just praying and sending thoughts and prayers, because something needs to be done now. So that's me.
Amen. Amen. Okay, in non-gun news this week, the Republican-led Senate on Thursday passed legislation cutting federal funding for Planned Parenthood, and it also repeals the Affordable Care Act. So the bill now goes on to President Obama, which is... he's almost certain to veto it. And they don't have the votes in the Senate to override that veto. So this move is more political than, you know, actually getting work done. This is definitely meant to be, from the Republicans, a message to their constituents to, you know, oh, we tried to cut federal funding for Planned Parenthood and repeal the Affordable Care Act. And for me, I'm like, if I supported those two things, I would still be super frustrated that you wasted all of this time doing this when you know it will not pass.
Mm-hmm.
And like finding different ways to get around, like they use this special tool called budget reconciliation to allow the measure to clear the Senate with only 51 votes instead of the 60, because if you need 60, then they can't get it through. And I'm like, what about this is budget reconciliation? Like, this is just not, it's political gerrymandering. And it disgusts me because these men and women in Congress make money no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they are elected officials, they make money. They don't have to get anything done. They don't have to actually pass legislation that is helpful or that will do anything. They just have to be there. And I think this is incredibly frustrating. And how can you... I just feel no trust about whether or not they're working for the American people when things like this happen, where you know it's going to fail, but they invested hours and manpower in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mad about that.
I'm also very mad about that. Like, I just find it ridiculous that we're paying people to represent us that are working for their own political kind of deals. And to work so hard on something that's going to fail, just so you can be like, well, we tried, is just so, just horrendous to me. So...
So, pastors, preachers, and teachers, we highly suggest, no, we've got nothing for you as far as political action.
Yes.
Yeah. We want to maintain our non-existing tax-exempt status as a very, very profitable charity that we are. No, but this is a great time to talk to your people about actually communicating with their senators because, and their representatives. Senators and representatives don't care what you say on Facebook, but they do care if you call, write letters, and send emails. So mm-hmm. this is a great time to encourage people to do that. I believe I saw from a pastor friend that politicians are currently in Washington getting letters 100-1 against allowing Syrian refugees into the country. So wherever you kind of fall on that scale and that decision, like this is how the people appear to be voicing to the politicians. I mean, these are the people who are sending letters, people who are against refugee resettlement in America. So, think about that. If you haven't contacted your senator or representative lately, it's really easy to find their information online and you can encourage your people to do it. Even if your people disagree on what they should contact the representative and do, it's still important, I think, for us to be voicing that so that they know what their actual constituents believe rather than only the people who take the time to call.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hey, do you guys remember that Flight 370?
Remember that Flight 370.
Yeah, that missing plane from Malaysia that went down on March 8th, 2014.
What happened to the plane, Carrie?
Well, we still don't know. Oh, but investigators are now using tools that are pointing them to look in the southern Indian Ocean. So, that's happening. I was just very curious about that. Like, I was like, do we know where that plane ended up? And apparently we still don't know. So,
wow.
Good luck, investigators, and your southern Indian Ocean exploration.
Isn't, like, 90% of the ocean unexplored, essentially? I may be making that statistic up, but I feel like a significant portion of the ocean, we haven't mapped it. Like, we know there's water, but we don't know how deep it is. We don't know what lives there. We're just like, well, we're pretty sure there's this kind of fish because that's a few miles from there, but we haven't explored it.
Yeah. I'm fairly sure, too, there's, like, I don't know, I read some statistics somewhere, which I don't know how they could get it, but they were, like, we're guessing that there's, like, so many, whatever, like, hundreds of species that we just don't know about because we're just not going in the ocean. So... maybe we'll see some cool fish too. Right. Like, I was like, if you haven't been there, how do you know how many species you don't know? But science.
They have PhDs. I trust them.
Right.
perhaps in what we should have listed under gun news. Do you remember George Zimmerman?
I do.
The man who shot Trayvon Martin and brought Florida's Stand Your Ground laws to national attention. He has not really had a very solid... life as a citizen post Trayvon's shooting, also pre Trayvon's shooting. Most particularly, he just this week has been suspended from Twitter after tweeting topless photos of a woman he claimed cheated on him with, quote, a dirty Muslim on Thursday, along with what appeared to be her phone number and her email address. So the state of Florida has has recently enacted what are called revenge porn laws, and that's revenge porn is when someone posts nude photos or other media content without the consent of the person in the photos, with the direct purpose of humiliating or shaming or otherwise degrading the person in the photos. There are websites for this. It's like people do this when they break up with someone or when someone cheats on them, and they post nude photos that they have of that person online. Because Zimmerman has only released topless photos, Floridian prosecutors are presently unwilling to go after him on charges because they've blurred the line between nude and not nude, apparently. I think it's just nobody wants to go after George Zimmerman because the man just has very... it's just a very messy situation.
Yeah.
So I guess that means we should probably be praying for him, too. Much as I don't want to because I think he's a scumbag.
That whole praying for your enemies thing really sucks sometimes. Like, kind of all the time, actually, it sucks. But it's good to do. It's just, ugh. Also, if you are looking for more information on the revenge porn laws, I don't remember now if it's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver or The Daily Show, but one of them did a segment on it that was really it was really good and eye-opening, which leads me to believe it was John Oliver, no offense, Daily Show, but I think he had more time. But talking about how this really ruins people's lives, and how easily it's done, and and how hard it is to prosecute. So
yeah, can you imagine, like, if you Google search someone's name, like if they're applying for work, you know, and you and every employer Google searches people's names now, like that's just a thing, and that's the first thing that comes up for someone. Multiple instances of that, and then you have to pull it from all the websites, and some websites won't take things down.
Yep. And for a while, I know they talked to a woman who I believe was a teacher, and this happened to her, and she said, like, I can't get a job now, obviously. And she said, you know, and it was just pictures meant only for this person. And it was something because the fact that she sent them to him, that they were now his property, so he could do whatever he wanted with those pictures, even though they're of her naked body, only meant for him, obviously was her intention. So I like there's work going into getting laws against that, and laws against them being the other person's property. So yeah, it's ongoing but still a problem.
This is maybe another reminder that we as church leaders should be making sure when we do conversations about sex with our kids, we do need to talk about how to responsibly use media and social media. And, like, nude photos can ruin a lot of lives. And how do we talk about that in a way that's actually effective? And
because as much as we want to think it's not our kids doing it, like, I remember in high school pictures going around of my classmates on people's phones, naked. Right. So it happens, and it's better to say that it happens and talk about it than to be whitewashing it and getting rid of it from our minds.
And I can see how it'd be easy for someone to argue, like, oh, well, I trust him or I trust her, like, that's why we're in love, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, but do you trust everyone who's in their family and on their shared plan and can access shared data? Do you trust all of his or her friends who he or she may either show the photos to in a bragging situation or who may just borrow their phone and find it? Do you trust everybody who does, who works for whatever company that phone and the data collection goes through to not download nude photos from the cloud? Because that can also be done. That's, I think, one of the ways that recent celebrity nude photos were received is that they were stored in the cloud and someone got them from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a lot of... It's not like... we're up against an impossible battle. We can, I think, teach our kids and our youth how to deal with the increasing amount of social media access that they have in a way that's responsible and respects their own bodies and respects each other. But the longer that we don't talk about it in churches, or sort of like, okay, if we tell them just not to have sex, they'll remember that that means no nudes on Snapchat. No. We have to be specific. And we have to talk about, you know, what do you do when someone requests these? And how do you sort through what you actually believe and how you're feeling in that particular situation? Because we know that just saying don't have sex does not actually help with not having sex.
Right.
We have higher rates of pregnancy and STDs and other messy issues in areas where we're doing abstinence-only education in schools, much less in churches. So, you know what is a great place to talk about it is the story of David and Bathsheba. Because Bathsheba did not have a lot of options in that situation. It's a great place to talk about, like, abuses of power and what you have to watch for in a relationship to make sure that you are actually choosing to be in that relationship and you feel like you're safe and you're choosing to be with that person. Okay, just a suggestion. Let's move on.
Also, there's to direct you toward Last Week Tonight, but it's an amazing program. John Oliver does a really good job. It was published in the summer talking about sex education in schools, and it ends with a hilarious sex education video that stars, like, Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally and I think Aisha Tyler, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but it's hilarious and awesome and very informative. So go check that out. Getting away from guns for a little bit. Well, actually, for the rest of this, yes, thank God. There's some Couple things happening between with the subjects of colleges and race happening this week. So Harvard Law School has come under some scrutiny for having elements drawn from a slaveholding family's crest on their official seal. They're in discussions about changing the seal or getting rid of those elements. Harvard is also, and the Harvard College as a big entity, not just the law school, is looking to put an end to the traditional use of housemaster. This was their title for the heads of residential housing. They call them housemasters, but they are looking to switch it to a new term after having discussions whether master has connotations of slavery. So whether the term housemaster brought up images and connotations of slavery. So they're looking into that. Also, campuses across the U.S. Might be seeing some tension. There's a major case coming to the Supreme Court next week that looks to put an end to racial preferences on college application forms. So that's happening.
That's going to be a fascinating discussion next week,
Yeah.
provided, you know, that we don't have another mass shooting and have to talk about that instead.
Right. But I'm definitely, I feel like looking forward is the wrong term, but I am anxious to see
Yeah.
how that plays out. I'm curious as to how this goes down. So I'm keeping an eye out.
Because, yeah, there's so many different things you can do with racial indications on college application forms. Like, are you trying to diversify your student body and therefore, you know, practicing a form of affirmative action? Are you trying to reverse diversify, create a homogenous student body, and therefore, you know, yeah, what is it doing? And we already know from sociological experiments that have been done that people coming in with ethnic sounding names, quote unquote, to job applications get about a 50% less return on phone calls than someone with the exact same resume and application who has a quote unquote white sounding name. So, oh gosh.
Also, for me, this brought up at the latest youth gathering in Detroit, Eric Barreto, a professor at Luther Seminary, spoke about race and talked about enrolling his children into preschool, I believe. And he is Puerto Rican and his wife is Caucasian. And he said, "My kids are Puerto Rican like their dad and Caucasian like their mom." And there was no form for them on that, or there was no box for them on that form. And when we talked to the administration about it and said, "Hey, like, they're half Puerto Rican, half white, and there's no list," they said that you need to pick one. And he said, "But they're both, like,
Right.
so it's, and that was an issue that I never even thought of being, just because I've never been in that situation before and was ignorant to it. But that, yeah, that's another issue with racial preferences is some, there's not a box for everyone.
Speaking of colleges, Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, which used to be limited to college students and now is open to everyone in the world, is donating a bunch of money to charity. He is donating 99% of his worth, along with his wife, Dr. Priscilla Chan. It's about most of their wealth is tied up in Facebook stock, and it's valued at $45 billion. So this sounded really great, and they're doing it on the birth of their daughter, and that sounded really great. But I, like many other people who use Facebook, have some suspicions about Mark Zuckerberg and whether or not he's a generous, kind person. So I read further up on this. There's a New York Times article that talks about it and says, well, they donated this, you know, Facebook stock, but they did not set up a charitable foundation, but instead a limited liability company. So that means, essentially, so a charitable foundation is subject to rules and oversight. And an LLC is not. An LLC allows you to still maintain the stock ownership. And when you donate, you can donate the stock through the LLC to charity. And that gives you a deduction at fair market value of the stock without triggering any tax. Whereas if you donate, you know, if you sell stock and then donate, then you pay capital gains and then you're taxed more heavily. So it could be a nice thing, but the way it was set up looks a little fishy, and we're just going to have to kind of keep an eye on how he chooses to do that.
Yeah. In sadder cultural news, Scott Weiland, who is the lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots, as well as Velvet Revolver, died at the age of 48 on Thursday night. He was on a tour stop in Bloomington, Minnesota, when he was found unconscious, or when he was found dead, and no cause of death has been released so far. There's been many statements from friends and family just saying, like, hey, we just kind of want our space right now, and just keep thoughts and prayers with that family. It just hit me hard because I really enjoy Stone Temple Pilots, so... Yay, 90s music. Other cultural news is that the copyright of Mein Kampf expires soon, which is that's that notorious manifesto of Adolf Hitler's. And so a team of historians have taken to it and have prepared a heavily annotated version that puts it into its historical context, which I just find fun. And like I'm glad that we're doing something with it instead of just having it be printed that... the way it is, but that it will now be printed with all of these annotations in it and it explaining it more. And so when it gets into people's hands, maybe they'll understand it more. And yeah.
Yeah. Part of me was definitely concerned when I saw that because I thought, oh great. Now it's going to be easier for people to get their hands on Mein Kampf because you can just distribute it freely on the internet. And I was like, no, if people really want to read Mein Kampf that badly, it's probably up for free on the internet already. So this is not, I'm not concerned.
Yep.
In sports news, the crazy sports thing of the week was the Lions, who have had a great season, played the Packers. They've had a fair season. The Packers were down the entire game. And on the last play, Devin Taylor, I think, tackled Aaron Rodgers. And there was a call that he touched Rodgers' mask, which you're not allowed to do because it can snap the neck and it's really bad. So the Packers got an untimed down penalty, and the score was at that point 23 Lions, 20 Packers. And Rodgers threw a Hail Mary pass, like from the back of the field, like something crazy, like 50 or 70 yards down to Richard Rodgers, snagged it, ran it to the end for a touchdown. So they literally were up for none of the game and won. Taylor and pretty much every single Lions fan is contesting that call, but there's nothing you can do once the game is over. Like, that's the call the ref made and we're done. And I stopped watching NFL games because I have concerns about concussion and about the culture of heroism we have around NFL players. I've talked about that before, but having watched a lot of NFL games in my past, I can't remember a game where we didn't look at it and say, like, wow, if that ref didn't make that call that could possibly be contested, this game would have turned out differently. So that's really, it's just hard. But if you have Packers or Lions fans in your territory, pastors, preachers, and teachers, you will need to know about this for Sunday.
Yeah. Quick cultural things that I've seen this week. First of all, Adele's new album is breaking records left and right. Like, she's broken a ton of them. It's also excellent. Yes, so well there you go. and exciting stuff on Netflix. One is Jessica Jones. I personally haven't watched it yet, but everyone's freaking out about it. At least a lot of people I talk to. super good Marvel superhero. Yeah. Women being awesome in it, and I saw a tweet from someone that was like, why are there only women in this show? Why can't men? Oh, this is what that feels like. And I was like, that's hilarious. So that's
it's a great show that deals with like rape culture as well and sort of like manipulative sexual relationships. So that might be another great inroad to talk with youth about how do you understand consent and positive power in relationships.
Also, Bill Murray is putting out a Christmas special for Netflix. And I saw the trailer for it, and I am just stoked. Like, yeah, it looks like the plot is basically that Bill Murray is hosting a Christmas party that then like very few people can get to, and then people start showing up, and Amy Poehler is hilarious in the trailer, and I'm just, and Jenny Lewis is in it too, which is very exciting to me. So, along with a bunch of other people, I think like Brad Pitt's in it, and like just a ton of people, but yeah, that's
That's
exciting.
delightful. NBC just recently aired its third live musical production. In the past, they did The Sound of Music and Peter Pan, which had not great critical reception, not a lot of popularity. They did a live production of The Wiz, and it was incredible. So that's a musical that was, it's based on The Wizard of Oz, but written specifically to feature an all-black cast. Had a movie made in the 1970s, which I believe included Michael Jackson, when he was still like a star and not kind of
Yeah.
tainted the way that he is now.
Nipsey Russell played the
Oh yeah,
Tin
that's
Man.
right. It's a great movie, and the live airing is now, I think, on pay-per-view or some sort of like on-demand thing. And it had like 11 million viewers and blew up Twitter, and it was really, really excellent. So, I think we can conclude we've had a really rough week news-wise, but we still have some really incredible things happening in the arts, which is definitely a beautiful place to turn to remind us that like we are capable of better things than just destroying each other systematically.
And I also just want to say that, I mean, it's Advent 2. And there's that whole, I mean, the biggest theme of Advent is hope, and that a light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. And I think right now, the church is one of the times that it is the most relevant, and people are hungry for the gospel, and people want to feel that hope. And not in a way that's surface level or insufficient, but that deep, real hope. So don't be afraid to talk about what's going on. I would personally encourage you to do so, to like saying, this is our life right now, and it is dark, and this last week was really difficult, and it was sad and heartbreaking, and it was anger-inducing. But we know that there is still hope, and that no matter how much the darkness closes in, light does not be is not going to be overcome by it. And as Emmy said, we are seeing light. There's light in the arts. There's light in the promise of this baby that's going to show up in a couple weeks. So, in a manger. So I just encourage you to really to stay hopeful and to really talk about these things and give people what they're so hungry for.
Preach. Amen. All right, that's all we have for you this week, preachers, teachers, and other leaders of the church. We send you off to preach the good news in a world that is full of despair, and we hope that this has been informational and helpful to you. We will be back next week with further information. Until then, we send a lot of hope with you and with all of us that we can continue to look for and be and witness lights in the darkness. Peace be with you.